starting here on the top of Kuf Zayin Aleph, of 6 lines down, the Gemara is continuing to discuss the issues of Nitialat Yadayim Rishonim. Yesterday we discussed the issues about how far up on the hand that you have to wash, until which joint you have to wash on the hand. Today we're going to speak about a little some of the other issues that are involved with Nitialat Yadayim, including Koach Gavra, Nitila Mitoch Kli, other items that make up the rules of Nitialat Yadayim Rishonim. So here it says, Amar Papa, Hayarito, Didalai A, so you have, as Rashi describes here, a river that's flowing, and then they have an irrigation system. They draw the water out of the river, and they pour it into the pipe that leads into the irrigation system. This person goes ahead and dips his hands in the irrigation system. So there, it's no good for Netilat Yadayim. Because by the time the water reaches you, the force that was the pouring of the bucket into the pipe system is already dissipated, because it's now flowing because of gravity, and the waters continue to move into the irrigation system, but it's not a direct result of the koach gavra. It's already secondary force. V'mikrev legabe davlo, if he gets up close to where they're actually pouring the water into the irrigation system, to the gautam koach gavra, then that's coming directly from someone's pouring of it, then notli menuli adayim. Here you see a very basic principle that we have for netilat yadayim, which is that you need koach gavra. Koach gavra means that you have to have some sort of force that is pouring, human force that is pouring the water in a sechet yadayim. Is a machlokas, whether it has to be human, whether a chereshot or kot, and a kof can do it. Is it somebody has to be a bardat that's pouring it, or simply it just has to be water that's poured? But for instance, turning on the tap is not enough, because that doesn't have a din of koach gavra. It's the gravity that's bringing the water through the piping system. That doesn't work, and that's what we see here. That the gravity in the piping system is not enough to create a koach gavra. You have to be where the person is actually pouring the water. Close enough to that, that it's classified as koach gavra. That's the tikkun derabanan. I'm assuming that they did that to differentiate from tevila. Tevila, which is a passive body of water, I think that's the differentiating factor here, that they made a koach gavra to differentiate it from mikveh, in terms of netilat yadayim. V'bzio davlo, if the bucket has a hole in it, bekonis mashket, if the bucket has a hole in it, the size that allows water to flow into the bucket, then melif life, e umatpil bat yadayim. Then it connects it back to the source, and he can do tevilat yadayim. The river is good for a mikveh. You can use the river for a mikveh. It's either mei mayan, moving water, or if it's stationary water, good enough for a mikveh. Now, in general, to connect the mikveh to other sources or other bodies of water, we need what's called kishvar feret hanod. It has to be a hole that's large enough that you can get a piping through it, have that in any mikveh that you go to. There's usually a stopper that you'll see in there with a pipe that allows you to connect to what's called the bor. The bor holds the 40 saw of rainwater, and then they can empty and refill the mikveh and be makshir al yedei neshika by connecting the two mikvot together. So over here, we're not dealing with that, because we don't have that size of a connection between them. We're dealing with a konis mashket, which is not enough. In addition, via mikveh, what's called a nitzok, a flowing body of water does not create a connection. It has to be something that allows for the intermingling of the water, but not a flow. Over here, what he does is he draws the water out of the river, and he's going to pour it into the pipe or the irrigation system. While he's doing that, there's a hole in the bucket. The hole in the bucket allows water to flow from the bucket back into the river. So now I'm connected back to the river that's there. Since I'm connected back to the river, I can stick my hands in there, and I'm considered as if I'm connected to the river or the place that he's drawing it from. If I do that, I have tevilat yadayim. This is a kula in the tevilat yadayim. Whereas for regular tevilah, this would not qualify as a connection. Number one is, it's not a big enough connection. We said before you need a shofar at the node, not just the konis mashke. Number two is, it's a nitzok. It's a flowing connection, which also is disqualified by a mikveh. So for a mikveh, this would be disqualified in terms of making it kosher to do tevilah in. But for tevilat yadayim, the rabbanim were makil over here, that's a good enough connection, that you can be tovil yadayim in this bucket, and you'll be fine. So there's the tevilat yadayim that you're doing here, which is kulot that we have by netilat yadayim, that allows tevilat yadayim in something that would not otherwise be good enough for a mikveh.
But it's a mild life, a mild life, a mild life. The reason that the government would be good
is because the hole allows water to flow out. And that water that flows out is kicking back, going back to your source. Picks up, draws a bucket from it. The hole has a flow of water that's going back to the river source. As you raise it from that water, there's, a stream of water pouring out of it because it's got a hole in it. And that water is connecting it back to the original source.
Ditch.
Right, or in the ditch, right, in the dike water, if you say that he's pouring and it's had a hole in the back
so
pouring at the same time.
The canal is like
he's tipping the water, it's coming over, but there's a hole in it with water flowing back to the source. Right, Vamarova. Kli, shinike bekonis mashke. If you have a kli that has a hole the size of bekonis mashke in it, ain notlimi menu yadai. You can't wash your hands from it. Now here the problem is because it's ois kli. It's not a kli. So Rava says, if you have this type of hole in it, you're not washing your hands with a kli. So in terms of nitilah, that's not going to work, because it's not a kli. In terms of the chibur, back to the original source, that makes it good enough for tvilah yadayim, that can work here, because then you're not using it as a kli. You're using it as a tvilah connected back to the original source. And now, Vama Rava, and another din from Rava, kli, she'en bo revi'it, ain not li memenal yadayim. The minimum amount of water you need for nitilah yadayim is a revi'it, halog. Ini, is that really true? Vama Rava, kli she'in magzik revi'it, ain not li memenu. A kli that's not the size that can hold a revi'it alog, you can't do nitilat yadayim from it. Ha magzik, as long as it holds a revi'it, avagav de lepe. Even if it doesn't have a revi'it alog, you could use it. So, Marsiz ha'alokash, ha'alachad, ha'atrei. Depends how many people you're using this washing for. Titan, you have a breita. May revi'it, if you have a revi'it alog of water inside of a utensil, notlim li yadayim le'achad, vavilu lishnaim. One person can use it to wash, and whatever's left in the bucket, the second person can wash from it. Because that's what's called Sher'ei Mei Tahara. That's what the Gemara is going to call it in a second. It came from a source that started with the right Shi'ur, and therefore it's called Sher'ei Mei Tahara. But if you start from the beginning without a Revi'it Alog, then you can't wash from that bucket, even a single individual. So you need a starting point of a Revi'it Alog. Once you've started with a Revi'it Alog, it doesn't matter how much is left in the bucket, you can continue to wash from that bucket because it came from a point that had a Revi'it Alog in it. So Amar Leir Rav Shesha the Meimar, Kabditu Amono, are you guys, when it comes to washing for an Atilat Yadayim, are you makbid that you have a kli? Amono, says Amar Leir Yin. That's like what we saw with Rava before. If it has a hole in it, Kikonis Mashke, it doesn't have a din of a kli, and therefore it's not good enough for an Atilat Yadayim. Achazuto, are you makbid on the color of the water, that the water should be in a manner or such that it looks like water? So he says, Amar Leir Yin, yes, we're makbid on that as well. Ashiura, are you makbid on the shi'ur, that it be revi'it alog? Amar Leir Yin, yes, ain ochanami. We're makbid on all these things. All these items that we just learned from Rava. One is that it has to be a kli, full-fledged kli. And number two is that it has to have a minimum of a revi'it alog in it. Obviously, chazuto is not what our Gemara is dealing with, so that we have from other places. So, ikadamri, hachi amar Leir. So some have another report of the story. Amono v'chazuto kabdina. He brings pride in the affirmative, too, about the kli and the appearance of the water. Ashiur alokam dinan. But he said about the shiur, we're not makbid that it be revi'it alog. Titanya may revi'it not limli adaim le'achad v'afilu l'shnayim. So if you can wash for two people from a revi'it alog, that means the second person is washing with less than a revi'it alog. So v'lohi, that is not true. Shiny hotam, that's different. Mishum deka'atu misharei tahara. That's the answer that we gave before, that if you start with the revi'it alog, you can continue to wash from that water as long as it started, the source was a revi'it alog. But you can't start from the beginning with less than a revi'it alog. So the minimum starting point is a revi'it alog. Once you hit that minimum threshold, then you can continue to wash from that kli with the water in it until the water is used up inside of it. So Itkin Rav Yaakov Minar Pokut, his city he established, he put into place the Bureau of Measurements. Therefore, he created a natla bat revi'ato. Created a natla here as a kli that had a revi'it in it, so people could measure how much a revi'it is. Rashi claims that this natla here was shel zechuchit. It was made out of glass. Glass utensil that gave the standard. It was the Ministry of Standards and Measurements that had the revi'it that everybody could measure against. And the same thing happened by Rav Ashi Behutzal. He created a kuza bat revi'ita. So Rashi says a kuza is a kli that is made out of cheres, kli cheres. It's an earthenware vessel. V'amar Rava, migufat chavit, shetikna. You have the cover, the stopper of a jar, of a barrel, to tikna, that you fixed it. Now, why do you have to fix it? Rashi claims you have to fix it because it doesn't have enough space internally in the cover to hold the revi'it alog. So you have to be chokek. You have to carve out more from the inside to allow it to hold the revi'it alog. So if you fixed it, notlim menu yadayim. You can use that for the kli to be notel yadayim. Right, so that's what Tosfos says over here, that he doesn't understand Rashi. He doesn't think that you have to be chokek, that it has the shape that will allow for it to protect the water. Problem is that it's pointy. It doesn't sit on its own. Since it doesn't sit on its own, what's a mitakin is you have to flatten out the backside so that it will sit in a stationary position rather than roll over. So Rashi says the tikkun here is that you allow it to have a revit, although you have to carve out more of it. And according to Tosafot, the tikkun over here is that you make it flat on the backside, which is really the top of the cover, to allow it to sit without falling over.
Right, and the stated, it's purpose, not that.
That's what Rashi says. Rashi says the Havamina is that since it's not made as a kli originally, that you're changing it to a kli now may not be sufficient because it's not made for internal consumption. The cover is made to be used as a cover, not to hold materials on its inside. It doesn't have a real toch to it. So even though you created a toch after the fact, maybe that's not enough to make it into a kli. That's Rashi says that. That's his Havamina. And Tosfot says, I don't think that's sufficient. I think that the issue here is really that you have to flatten out the back so that it can sit. All right, now we have Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a brayta that supports that position. Magufat chavit shetiknan notlim yemen al yadayim. So it's straightforward. All right, chemet u kvisha. Here we're talking about canteens. One is a water skin, the other one's like a leather bottle. Shetiknan, if you fix them, notlim yem the yadayim. So if you fix them up in the manner that they can be used now to pour the water on, then they're fine for netilat yadayim. And sak vikupa, on the other hand, sack or a basket. Even though they can hold a revit ma'im, ainot li mehem li yadayim. There you can't use them because that's not their primary purpose. Ain machtam la ma'im. Derubam ain mekablim ma'im. All our robe, asak and kubar, are not made to hold liquids and to hold water. So even though you fix them up now to do that, that's not the intent of such utensils. And therefore they don't gain a shame kli just because they're holding the liquids right now. And therefore they're pasul for being notel yadayim from them. Here's some of the basics of Koach Gavra. There's a very, very important Tosafot here about Koach Gavra. Tosafot, it says, Lo atabi Koach Gavra. He quotes, Perish, Vehuchalot Gedalot. He quotes from the Bahag, that Shemudar lat gil yadayim betoch hakli de chashiva netila. He says that netil yadayim is not just pouring. It just has to be, you can even dip your hands into a kli. If you take the water out in a kli and dip your hands in it, that's fine. So Tosafot here goes to re-explain, how do we explain his position? Over here, it's pretty clear that you need koach gavra that to pour it. So he re-explains the position. If you could drop down a bit, he says, kashel perishot, achomar, you don't tell me, menu, to lot to me koach gavra. Our Gemara is explicit. Mashem debinim koach gavra hashofeich. You need somebody's pouring the water, not a matbil. Miu yesh lamar debinim netila min hakli. You need netila from a kli. Ben tovel yadav betoch hakli. Ben shofeich min hakli. Ayadav yeshka netila min hakli. So that's the answer that Tosas gives. Koach Gavra here is only important because it has to be that this water is associated with a kli. Not that you have to have Koach Gavra in the sense that a person is pouring the water onto your hands, or you are pouring the water onto your hands, but you need a din that this came from a kli. Well, you can have water come from a kli in two ways. One is somebody pours the water onto your hands. Number two is you dip your hands into the kli. That means that the water came from a kli. So what's the problem in our irrigation system here? Is that when you're too far away from the kli, the water is no longer coming from a kli. It's already disseminated through this system. The water that you're dipping in now has nothing to do with the original water from the kli. Whereas, if you're close to the source, then the water that you're getting is coming from a kli. This is the Bahag's Kiddush. The Bahag's Kiddush is that Netilat Yadayim is equally good with Tevilat Yadayim and Netilat Yadayim as long as it's in the kli. You use a kli, you're okay. Then, Tosafot says, Tzarech HaHachmir came to Sugi Deshmaitin Rabbi Yossi. If you do that, then according to the Bag Halakat Gedolot, our Sugi has to be like Rabbi Yossi, who's the Miut. Chamim disagree with him. And therefore the Loch is not like Rabbi Yossi. B'yamadam natal yado achat, v'chuzer mishafshef v'chavrater, tzarech l'chzor v'lito. This brings another din, very important din in Netilat Yadayim. Which is, number one, he says, you have to be machmir, not like the Bag Halakat Gedolot, that you actually need koach gavra. Number two is, if you only wash one hand, and then you touch that hand to the other hand, you're starting over, you reset. Because the whole problem is the tumat yadayim, where you're mitar one yad, and then you touch the other hand, you start it over again, and you have both hands need to be washed again. And then, he says, v'tzarech lishpoch mayma yadav gimel pi'amim. You have to pour water on your hands three times. So we only do twice on our hands. So where is those who get the three times? That has to do with the fact that we really should be doing it three times. And that is, he says, one, pam rishona, kedei, lavir tit, davar chotzeitz mal yadav. The first pouring is to make sure your hands are clean. You can only do netilat yadayim if your hands are clean before you do the netilat yadayim. So we don't do the first one of them because we make sure that your hands are clean. If your hands aren't clean, you need to wash them before you do netilat yadayim. Upam shnia, the second time is the tahar yadav. The second time is to take the tumah that's on your hand and wash it off with that water. Pam shlishit is the taheru tamayim. You have residual water on your hand now that took the tuma from the hands, and now that water's tameh. How do I wash away that water? I pour the third time to wash it away. So we who do the washing of our hands separately to make sure they're clean, we have left with the two pourings. The first one, which is to remove the tuma from the hand. The second one is to remove the tameh water that's there. So that's why we wash twice on each hand. So that's if you think that the wrist is the cutoff, if you only washed a portion of your hand, which would allow you to eat the food, you risk that the water flowed up onto the upper half of the hand and rolled back onto the lower half of the hand and be metameh your hand again. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah speaks about.
What was it?
It's a machloket in Yadayim, whether if a kof pours water on your hand. So that's machloket. All right, next question. What happens if you don't wash your hands, but you just cover them? You use this is the famous dispensation that's used in cases where you can't wash your hands. What happens if I take a napkin, handkerchief, and I don't touch the bread? Do we worry about the fact that he might come to touch the food? Oh, no, we don't worry about it. Tashma. This is Minyan Adiyoma. This is a Gemara in Sukkah. Story about Rabbi Tzadok, who was a Kohen. They gave him food to eat. They gave him food that was less than a kibetza's worth. First of all, he did not wash his hands for it. He took it in a handkerchief in some sort of cloth and ate it. He didn't go into the sukkah because he thought the minimum standard you need to be in the sukkah for was a kibetza. And he did not say a bracha achrona on it because he thinks in order to be chayv and bracha achrona, you need to be a chalta v'savata. Savata is a minimum of a kibetza, and therefore it did not qualify for a chalta v'savata. So my love, what would have been the case? Hakabetza. If it was the size of a kabetza, by Netilat Yadayim, he would have had to wash his hands. I says, no. Dilma hakabetza by suko by ibrocha. Maybe the standard of kabetza was not about the Netilat Yadayim, it's about the other factors here. One is if you had a kabetza, you'd have to eat in a sukkah. And number two is if you had a kabetza, you'd also have to make a bracha achrona. So you don't have any proof from that story of Rabbi Tzadok. Tosos raises an interesting issue here. The Gemara in Brachot, Kitzad Mivarchim, the sixth parak, asks, how do you know that you're chayav in bracha rishona? Where it says, it's a kal v'chomer mi bracha achrona. If mekasher husavei, when he's already filled and satisfies mivarech, when he's hungry, al chatkam makamah should give bracha to a kodesh bracha that he's about to eat. So where it says, it's a kal v'chomer mi bracha achrona. Well, if that's the case, if over here Rabbi Tzadok does not make a bracha on the bracha achrona because it's not a kibetza, then how come he wouldn't have to make a bracha rishona either? If you don't have a bracha achrona, why should you have to make a bracha rishona? Because it says that's not right. Because the Gemara says that even b'mashu you have to make a bracha rishona. So how could it be that if it's a kal v'chomer? So in the end, Tosafot says, well, truthfully, it can't be a real kal v'chomer. Because if it was a real kal v'chomer, then it would make it a din d'oraita to have a bracha rishona. Because that's one of the shlosh esrim midot. If d'oraita, you have to have a bracha achrona, benching is a bracha achrona midah in a Torah. If the kal v'chomer is a real kal v'chomer, then bracha rishona would then be a d'oraita. And we know that's not true. It's all d'rabbanan. So then he says that even though we don't say dayo, because even in a kol shu, you're going to make a bracha rishona, he says that the kal v'chomer is just a way for us to bring about the issue of bracha rishona. Once we have bracha rishona, it has its own dinim. That you do it on a mashuhu, even when there's no bracha achrona, all those dinim that come from bracha achrona are not going to apply over here. It's just a way for us to engage in having a bracha rishona. Once we have that, the particular dinim are not going to transfer. It's not a real limud d'oraita to make bracha rishona a din d'oraita from bracha achrona. Right, so now Gemara says, Tashma, let's try another proof. The Shmuel, Ashkechei the Rav, the Ka'achil b'mapo. Shmuel found Rav eating with a handkerchief, a cloth. Amalei, Abdin Kedain? Are we allowed to do such a thing? Are you allowed to eat without washing your hands and do this? Samalei datik tzara alai. He says, I actually washed. I washed my yadayim, but I'm an istinis. And I don't like eating with my hands. I don't like touching the food. I'm very particular, so therefore I used the handkerchief to hold the food. Not because I didn't wash my hands, but because I didn't want to touch the food. I didn't want to get dirty. Kisalik Rabbi Zeira. Ashkechinu da Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi. So when Rabbi Zeira went up to Eretz Yisrael, found Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi, v'kachle bivlai chamutot. They were eating with worn down canteens. This is like the chemet we had before. They had worn down ones. They would put it on their hands and use those to hold the food. All right, Trey Gavre Ravavika Tavataichu, two great Hachamim like you, Litu Bedrabi with Shmuel, made a mistake in the din of Rav and Shmuel. Here we had the discussion before Rav and Shmuel, and Rav was explicit that you can't use a mappa, and over here they are. So he says, Ha Dati Katsara Kamar. Rav was explicit that the only dispensation was because he was worried about touching the food, not because he didn't wash his yadayim. So Ishtamite, Rabbi Zera forgot about Hadam Rav Tachlifa Baravimi Amar Shmuel. Heitiru mapa lochle truma. If someone who is eating truma on a regular basis, meaning a kohen, you're allowed to use a mapa to eat the truma. Heitiru mapa lochle tarot. On the other hand, those people who normally don't eat truma, but are eating al tarat ha-trumah, or tarat ha-kodesh, meaning that they are eating chulin with tahara, they are not allowed to use the mapa. Rabbi Yasi, kohanim havu. Rabbi Yami and Rabbi Yasi, as well as Shmuel, were all kohanim. Since they were kohanim, they were permitted to eat with a cloth. Because since they eat truma all the time, and they are very aware of truma and tahara, therefore we say they can do it. We don't worry about them touching the food, because they're already versed in this type of contact with food and being careful about tumantara. Therefore, they can eat with a handkerchief or with some sort of mapa cloth. On the other hand, people like us, regular people, who are not kohanim, who go to eat food, we're not so careful with tumantara. We're not so versed in it. And therefore, we can't just make a decision and take it with a mapa. We have to be careful because we might come to touch it if we take it with a mapa, and you have to actually wash your dayan. So that was the distinction over here for Rabbi Yami, Rabbi Yasi, and for Shmuel that he was a kohen. Ochel machmat ma'achil. Sarkne dilat yadayim olov. So this next part of the Gemara, down to the Mishnah here, is about the question of what happens if someone's feeding. If you're not actually touching the food, but someone else is feeding you, who has to wash hands here? So the first question of the Gemara is, does the eater have to wash his hands? He's not touching the food, someone else is feeding him. So does he have to wash hands? So tzarek nitle demolo, tashma. Tzarevuna bar schora hava koi kameh Rav Hamnuna. We're standing in front of Rav Hamnuna. Balam le umtza v'achil. So here, balam, the number of interpretations given, Tosfos says balam is perush upat ima, that had bread with it. He took a piece of meat and bread and stuffed it, put it into his mouth. He gave him some shawarma, and he fed him some shawarma. Rashi over here says balam is with the mem stuma, like from the words that we use for balomim, which are breaks. So it's something that is stopped up. So Rashi says that means that it was stuck into the coals. It was meat that was buried into the coals. That's where the balam comes from. And he also has another interpretation is from the first one, which is bemem stuma kamo idav diblom shemetek varesin mechatchin idav, a slice of meat or a cut of meat, and that's out of the three. So the three different types of balam over here. One is that it was bread around the meat. Other one is Rashi said it was meat that came out of the coals that was buried in the coals. Or the first one Rashi says it's a piece of meat. It was cut meat. So he fed him it avachil, and he went and ate it. Amalei ilav de Rav Hamnuna at. If you were not a Rav Hamnuna, lo safinilach, I would not feed you this meat. So my time, what's the reason? Lav minishum de zohir velo noga. He was certain that Rav Hamnuna knew the dinim of Tuma and Tara, and since it's yadayim where it's meot, he knew that he wouldn't go and touch the food. Therefore, he was so mechanad and he fed Rav Hamnuna. So lo, de zohiriz kodim umashi yadei mi'ikoro. Do you see a switch in the word here from zahir and zariz? Originally, the Gemara thought he was a zahir. He was careful not to touch the food. In the end, the Gemara says, no, that he was not a zahir, but a zariz. A zariz is someone who is careful, actually takes into consideration what can happen, and therefore he washed his hands prior. He washed his hands in case, even though he wasn't necessarily going to eat. He just washed his hands in case, and therefore his yadayim were tarot. Rashi over here brings down that difference. Rashi says, zariz, adif mizahir. Zariz is better than a zahir. Zahir, shiudeli zahir b'shat ma'aseh. That's someone who's careful when they're in the situation. When they're in a certain situation, they're careful about what transpires in that situation, in the current situation. Whereas a zariz is haro'et nolad, someone who sees or anticipates what's going to happen. And therefore, he's a zariz because he looks forward, not just at the present. And that's part of what the Mesilat Yesharim quotes from Rabbi Pinchas' list of items that an individual aspires to reach Yirat Hashem, in terms of getting close to Hashem. In that list, it says first, zahir, as he root, mivi lidei zirizut. If you first are zahir, that brings a person to be zariz. If you're very careful about the situations that you're in, eventually you'll reach the point where you realize that if you look it forward and you anticipate, you'll be even able to control your situations better, and therefore zihirut brings to zrizut. But from that you see that zrizut is a higher level than zihirut. Right, so we don't have a proof from that. Next, tashma. Dam Rabbi Zera Marav, lo yiten adam pusal tok piv shamash. Shouldn't put food. You have the waiter who's serving the people there. Don't give him some food to eat. What's the problem? Unless you know that he washed his hands. Well, if he didn't wash his hands, so here it seems pretty clear that the person who you're feeding must have washed his hands. Every cup of wine that's given to the waiter during the meal, he has to make a separate bracha on it. But food that he's given during the meal, he can make one bracha, and that's enough. So what the reasons are, well, first one is clear. The Gemara says that he didn't wash his hands, therefore you can't feed him food. The second one is, why does he have to make a separate bracha on every cup of wine he gets? It's because the waiter should not anticipate getting wine during the meal. When the Baal HaBayit or someone extends him wine, that's a privilege given to the waiter. It's not something you should expect to recur during the meal. So he makes a bracha, he's mesiach dato afterwards, and when he gets a new cup, he's got to make another bracha. On the other hand, the assumption of the waiter is that he will get food. The people there will be nice and give him food to eat, and therefore when he gets one piece of food, he expects to get more pieces of food along the way. That was the way they tipped their waiters, was that they gave him pieces of their meal or pieces of their food. That was the tip to the waiter. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Mevarech, I'll call Prusa Prusa. Rabbi Yochanan said he make a bracha on every piece of bread. Amar Papa Bishlamo Derab Rabbi Yochanan Lokasha. I understand what the machlok is between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan's about. Ha de ikar adam chashuv, ha de lekar adam chashuv. It depends on who's present at the meal. If there's a important person at the meal, the waiter assumes that he will get fed. Since he assumes he will get fed, then each piece he doesn't have to make a second bracha on, because the assumption is that he will get food. If there's no adam chashuv there, then he can't anticipate he's going to get fed, because that doesn't mean that there's a lot of extra food, doesn't mean that people are going to be generous. Adam chashuv is someone who dispenses food to others, and therefore the waiter can expect to get food, otherwise not. Mikol makom, hada amar, ilanim ken yodesh natal yadav, the proof that you brought from the fact that the shamish washed his hands, or has to wash his hands, in order for you to feed him the food, shani shamash, ditarid. Shamash might be an exception. A waiter might be an exception to the rule. Why is a waiter an exception to the rule? Because a waiter is busy. He's not focused on not touching the food. Maybe in a normal situation, we can trust the person that you are feeding not to touch the food. But a waiter is running around doing things, and since he's distracted, he might come to touch the food because he's not focused on not touching the food. So we don't have a proof from that. Tan Rabbanan. Lo yiten adam prusa l'shamash, ben shakos biyado, ben shakos biyado shel bal habayit. You're not allowed to feed the shamash food during the meal. Whether the kos, whether the waiter himself is carrying the cup of wine, or whether the Baal HaBayit is drinking the wine. Shema yira devart kukula b'suda, because it might cause some very unpleasant outcomes in the suda. Somebody might choke, somebody might spill the wine. Why is that? Because we might be that the Baal HaBayit, and we saw this earlier in the Masechta, that the Baal HaBayit didn't have sufficient food for all the guests. And if one of the guests extends food to the shamash, gives the waiter food, then he's out of food. We had that with the shemen before in this Masechta, the shemen and the wine floating on top. You have to be modia what's in the barrel, because otherwise somebody would be somech on it, and those people committed suicide because they invited guests over, and they didn't have enough or sufficient means or materials to give them. So also over here, we don't give a tip to the waiter. You shouldn't be giving tips to the waiter because you don't know what the Baal HaBayit has in store. And therefore you might run out of food. That's one possibility. Rashi brings another possibility about why you shouldn't be tipping the waiter, is because shlo yichos Baal HaBayit, that the Baal HaBayit will get angry. He doesn't want his waiter to get a tip. He's either upset at the waiter, he doesn't want to give it. He'll give the waiter a tip later. And when you give him a tip, the Baal HaBayit will get angry, and then he'll come to choke on the wine that he's drinking, or he'll cause scream and get angry, and the cup that the waiter's holding will drop. And that there could be all these difficult situations that come out, unpleasant outcomes that come out from it. So better that you as a guest don't do the tipping, you don't give the waiter food. Now, v'ashamash, and shamash, who you don't, hasn't washed his hands, you can't put food into his mouth. So over here, again, that's a particular din that surrounds the shamash. And it's not clear from here, we can't prove anything from here in terms of what the general practice would be. So next is, Yibailahu, ma'achio, tzarich nitlet yadayim o'ena tzarich. The person who's doing the feeding, do they need to wash their hands? Is the din of takana, is the takana only about someone who's actually eating the food, or is it in somebody who is in contact with the food? So tashma, the tani be menashe, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer, isha midichat yada achat b'mayim, noten epat l'bna katan. So this is minyana di yoma yoma kippurim. Yoma kippurim, where you don't wash your hands. A woman is feeding her child on Yom Kippur, because he has to eat. Does she have to wash her hands? So Gemara says she washes one hand, the hand that she's going to extend the food to the child to. So here's a case of a ma'achil, someone who's feeding someone else, and we demand nitilat yadayim. He didn't want to feed the children on Yom Kippur because he didn't want to have to wash his hands on Yom Kippur. In order to show him that he was wrong, they forced him to wash both hands and feed the child with both hands on Yom Kippur. Because they thought it was wrong. You have to feed the child. You wash your hands. That type of washing on Yom Kippur is not problematic. You're not washing for Hana'ah. You're washing because you're moving to Mutumah. You're washing for Nikiyut. And we said there's a dispensation in Yom Kippur. If your hands are Meluchlach, you're allowed to wash the dirt off of your hands. This Tumah is no worse than the dirt that's there. And therefore you can wash it off on Yom Kippur. Not a problem. So Rabbaye, Hata Mishum Shivta. Now, that's a problem because Rashi says Ruach Ra. It was actually a case where they didn't wash Tefillat Yadayim in the morning. They didn't wash Negelvasser. Since they didn't wash Negelvasser, they had Ruach Tumah on their hands. Since they had Ruach Tumah on their hands, you're not allowed to come into contact with food. So now, on Yom Kippurim, where we don't eat otherwise, so what's the big deal? If you didn't take the Ruach Ra off of your hands, what's the big deal that you didn't wash Negelvasser in the morning? You're not touching food anyway. So over here, where they come into contact with food, meaning that where they have to feed a child, then they have to wash Negelvasser to get rid of the Ruach Ra, because they're coming into contact with food. That's the way Rashi learns it. That's what he says the problem is here. Tosafot disagrees and says, I don't understand. One of the rules of Ruach Ra, while we wash Negelvasser in the morning, is yes, you can't come into contact with food. But there are other things you're not allowed to do either. You're not allowed to touch your eyes, you're not allowed to touch your nose, your ears, anything, any orifice in your body, you're not allowed to touch if you don't take off the Ruach Ra. Who wants to go through a whole Yom Kippur? You can't touch your eyes, you can't rub your eyes. He says, that makes no sense. Of course they wash Negelvasser. He says, no, Shifta is a different type of Tumah. It's a Tumah that comes on food and affects children. Children that are 4 or 5 years old, and it affects them. That Tumah can be removed by washing. So Tosa says, okay, so they wash in their day because of this Tumah. What happened today? All of a sudden we don't worry about this Tumah anymore? Tosa says, brings down the end, and he says, Ma she'ein anu nizarim achshav, mizeh, why don't we worry about this Shifta Tumah that comes about, that comes on the food and affects the children? Vi she'ein ota ruach ra metzuya b'neinu. That ruach ra doesn't show up amongst us. It doesn't come in our circles, and just like we're not makpid on zugot, which is the Gemara and the Psachim, Arvei Psachim, that says that you shouldn't eat things or drink things in pairs because they're going to have horrible outcomes because of the shedim that come from zugot. And the Gemara there says that whoever doesn't worry about them, it doesn't affect them. Therefore, we're not makpid on zugot. Vela giloi. Tosa mentions giloi as another example of that. Giloi being water that was left over overnight. We don't worry about it. So all of these things, we don't worry about them because in Mitsuya Bineinu, they're not amongst us. We don't worry about snakes. We don't have snakes around us. We don't have this poison in our foods. And therefore, we don't worry about these issues. Tosfos says that it's a different type of Tumah, not the Negelvasser Ruach Ra, but that Tumah is not amongst us anymore. Tashma, Davud, he found his son Shmuel, the called Bochi, he was crying. He says, why are you crying? He says, the Machin Rabbi, I got, and my Rebbe smashed me. Samai. He said, why did he hit you? Why did your Rebbe hit you? He says, Damali, kasafid libray velo mashit yadei. That you fed my child. The Rebbe said to Shmuel, you were feeding my son, and you didn't wash your hands before you fed my son. So he says, v'amai lo mashit, why don't you wash your hands? Amalei, hu achil v'na mashina? He was eating, and I should wash my hands? So it wasn't that Shmuel was also eating, but he was feeding his son, and he was not eating at all. So he said, why? I should wash my hands because I'm feeding him? It's not enough that this Rebbe doesn't know the halacha. And then he hits my child. Not only does he's got the halacha wrong, and now he's hitting my child with the wrong halacha. So what do you see from this? If you are eating what someone else feeding you, then you do require netilat yadayim. Ma'achil, the feeder, does not require enu tzarich netilat yadayim. So you don't need netilat yadayim for feeding. You do need netilat yadayim for eating. If someone else is feeding you, you will require netilat yadayim. Again, someone's sick on bed. I'm not sure over there that whether the din would apply because they can't. The chashash is that shemen yigat, that they might touch the food. If they're sick in bed and they can't touch the food anyway, then they might not have applications. A bandage or a cast, and they can't use them. Then it may not apply in that situation. So the only situation maybe when the hand will come in contact with the food. You can put meat and cheese together in a single wrapping. As long as they don't touch each other. As opposed to the first Mishnah, which says somebody eating meat and cheese cannot eat on the same table. Over here, if you have two guests, they can eat at the same table, even though they're eating milk and meat. We don't worry about it. Why do we worry about the milk and the meat or the cheese and the meat touching each other? What's the big deal? They're both cold. When they're cold, they don't absorb flavors from each other. You need heat to transfer flavor. True, if they're not hot, then you don't have to take off the top layer. They don't absorb from the flavor. But hadocha milobai, you still have to rinse them off. So we don't want you putting them in contact with each other because you have to rinse them off before you eat them. Even tzonin b'tzonin requires rinsing. So you have milk and meat that come into contact that are cold, you have to rinse them off. So in order to avoid that, you want to put them in a simple cloth, make sure they don't come into contact with each other. As long as they don't know each other. If they know each other, then it's problematic because then they might exchange food. They might be willing to eat from each other. So they came to a single bed and breakfast. One came from the south, one came from the north. One comes with his piece of meat. One comes with his cheese. They can eat on a single table without any problem. And they only answered it in one bundle, if it's all together. It says, what does what bundle have to do with over here? Talk about eating on a table. What does it have to do with tfisa achat? Ela ke'ein tfisa achat. If it's like a tfisa achat. As Rashi explains over here, ke'ein tfisa achat means that they are eating at the same table, and they know each other. Tfisaka means it's something you would wrap together. So if you know each other, then you would be willing to exchange the food, or it's like if it's one meal. So it's as if it's one meal, we don't allow you to come together. On the other hand, if you don't know each other, then you wouldn't wrap the food together, you wouldn't put it together, and then you don't have a problem eating on the same table, because there will be no exchange of the food between the two people. Tosos over here says, based on this, Miesh Davar Mafsik Lo Vikein Tfisakat. If you have something separating between the individuals, then there's no problem with tfisa achat, and that's what we're knowing today. If two people are eating milk and meat on the same table, you have to put up a hefsek, you have to put up something that is a reminder between them. If you put in, he says over here, you put a salt shaker in between them, put the napkin holder in between them, something that reminds them that it's a separate meal. You put in a separate mapa, separate tablecloth or a place setting, something that distinguishes them from each other, that's enough to be a heker here. And that's what Tosa says, because the Gemara says that in order for you to become a magnet, it has to be tfisa achat. Sacha means that we're like a single entity. Well, if you do something that makes you not a single entity, that's enough to create this hefsek to stop the problem over here. All right, so now the Gemara finishes off. Asks a question, Amar le Rav Yemar bar Shalmayo le Abaye, Shnei Achim u'makpidim zeh al zeh. When they have two brothers, they know each other, obviously, but they are makpid, not to share. They're very makpid on each other. They don't share anything. They don't exchange anything. Ma, what's the din? Amar le, kol asirikim asirim, asirikei baitus mutarim. So this is a din from Psachim. In Psachim it says you're not allowed to make breads or matzot on Pesach that have intricate designs on them. The fear is that in the time it takes to make the intricate design, the bread will rise and you have chametz. So we don't allow you to do it. Now, baitos had a special mold. It was a mold that made these intricate designs. So it was very fast for him. He didn't have to make the designs. He just put it in the mold that came out. So Gemara says, what about baitos? His srikei, his cakes, you should be able to eat with the designs on them. The Gemara says, no, because when the Chachamim make a takana, it's objective, not subjective. And they say, therefore, people are going to say, what? All cakes are asur, baitos' cakes are okay? No, we say cakes, period, with these designs on them are no good. This is from the Gemara by Tisha B'Av. Shua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to launder your clothing. And Avel was not allowed to launder his clothing. What happens if he only has one piece of clothing? So now he needs to launder the clothing because it's dirty. He can't just wear this all week. So mutar lechavso b'chol shemoed. You can wash it on chol shemoed. You can wash it during avilah. You can wash it during Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. All these items where you're not allowed to launder, here you have dispensation to launder because this is only a piece of clothing. Yomru kol asrikim asurim asrikim baitos mutarim. So he pulls out the same thing on him. He says, wait a minute. What? So this guy can wash, nobody else can wash? If you say that it's an objective standard, nobody should be able to wash their clothing, even though he has one chaluk, even though he has one piece of clothing. My answer's up, no. Hamar baravashi izuro mochia chalav. His girdle, his belt, identifies it. Because in their day, you only had one belt that you transferred from cloth, from your tunic to tunic. Whatever tunic you wore, you transferred the belt over. So if the person is laundering their tunic, he would still be wearing his belt on the tunic that he has, because he would transfer from that tunic to this one, and the other one he would launder. If he's laundering his tunic with the belt on it, what's it clear? He doesn't have another piece of clothing. So if the belt is on the piece of clothing that he's laundering, you know for sure that this is his only piece of clothing. So since there's something that identifies clearly that this is his only chaluk, then you won't have this mix-up. By baitus, once after the fact you have a design on a cake, you don't know how that was made. You don't know if it was made in a mold or by somebody intricately doing it by hand. So because of that, there's no distinctive factor that will tell you which or how to separate between them. And so the same thing over here with the brothers. How do we know these are brothers that don't like each other or brothers that do like each other? So since we know they know each other, nobody eats together. That's period. It's an objective standard. Because there's nothing that identifies that they are different than others. Where you have something that's mochiach, that's different than others, like this belt, then you can make dispensations for individuals. Okay, we'll stop over here.